determines to follow him, apparently leaving his profession, leaving his job, and following Jesus. We read a little later on in the gospel accounts that Peter will become part of what sometime is referred to as the inner circle of disciples. You know, you had the Jesus had many disciples, but then he had his 12 closest circle of disciples, those who would become the apostles. But even within that close circle of 12, there was a circle within the circle, so to speak. There were three who formed sort of the inner circle. James and John, the brothers, who we also have read about in Matthew 4 and Luke 5. And Peter. And these three men would formulate what sometimes is called the inner circle, because they were privy to some events that not all the disciples, even the 12, were privy to. We see in Luke chapter 8, verse 51, when Jesus raised Jairus' daughter from death, in that room with Jesus were the girl's parents, and not all his disciples, but who? James and John and Peter. In Matthew chapter 17, verse 1, when Jesus is transfigured on the mountain before his disciples, it's not all of his disciples. It's not even all of the 12. It's Peter, James, and John. And then we read in Matthew chapter 26, verse 37, as Jesus is facing the events of his final night on earth, and he's praying so very earnestly for the cup to pass and for the Father's will to be done, and he's in the garden, that all his disciples except Judas are with him. But then he takes Peter, James, and John apart from those who remain a little further to encourage him and to pray with him. And so Peter forms one of these people that we might say is very close to Jesus. Felt very close to Jesus. Knew things and had witnessed things about Jesus that not just everybody, even in that close circle of the 12, had witnessed or been a part of. No wonder maybe he felt like he might have been the ones who deserved to be so very prominent. James and John had the same problem too, didn't they? We're talking more about Peter this morning. But following. Following by faith. Here he followed Jesus to all these unique places and these unique events, having given up his livelihood at least to follow him. And Peter's faith is remarkable on many occasions. Matthew chapter 16, we remember that Jesus is asking his disciples, you know, everybody's talking about me. Who do men say that I am? And they respond, well, some say you're, you know, Jeremiah or Isaiah, or one of the other prophets. And Jesus then specifies the question a little more, but who do you say that I am? Peter, the outspoken one, the one who would always pop up. Thou art the Christ. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You remember Jesus' response, blessed are you, Peter. Following by faith. Remarkable faith. On another occasion, we read in the Gospel of John, chapter 6, Jesus has been teaching and preaching many followers. And when he preaches and teaches what the Bible calls some of his hard sayings, there's a visible reaction from the crowd. John chapter 6, verse 66 tells us, from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. These are the ones who were not following because they didn't have faith. But you notice what the text tells us a little further. Jesus said to the 12, verse 67, do you also want to go away? And Peter speaks up. Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? For you have the words of eternal life. Also, we have come to believe and to know that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Following by faith. Remarkable faith. Incredible faith. Faith that you and I should look to imitate and to put into our own hearts and our own lives. Faith that was, I believe, very sincere. Faith that was against the odds of much of society of his day. Peter's faith was against the odds even of some who, at least temporarily, were disciples. Because John 6 tells us a lot of those disciples did what? They turned back and walked with him no more. It wasn't Peter. He would continue. He would keep on. As we again return to that night of Jesus being in the upper room with his disciples, the final night of his life on earth, Jesus, speaking to his disciples, tells them many things that are difficult for them to comprehend, but they respond on the level, at least the best that they can. And when we look at Matthew's account of all of this occurring in Matthew chapter 26, we read some interesting statements from Peter once again that demonstrate his faith. In Matthew chapter 26, at about verse 31, Jesus said to them, Matthew 26, verse 31, Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For as it is written, and he quotes from the Old Testament, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. And after I've been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter answered. Leave it to Peter to speak up first. Peter answered and said to him, even if all, talking about everybody else in the room, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. I think he's sincere. I believe he means it. I don't think these are empty words. I think that's his conviction. That's his heart. He's been with Jesus all these many months, so over 3 years likely by this point. And I believe he is convicted and he is convinced that this is what he will do if the opportunity presents itself. Now, we know a little differently, and that's what point number two is going to be more about. But let's not discredit him for his sincerity and his earnestness and his heart on this occasion. Jesus goes on to say in our text in Matthew chapter 26, verse 34, assuredly, I say to you, speaking to Peter because of Peter's response, assuredly, I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times, not to be deterred. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And notice it says, and so said all the disciples. Peter was not alone in this affirmation. But Peter stands out because he apparently did it first. He did it boldly. He did it confidently. And yes, I believe he did it sincerely, just like the others, with all his heart. Remember, it's this same night that Jesus says, you know, Satan has asked for you, and I'm praying for you, that your faith fail you not. Great faith. Great following by faith is demonstrated by Peter here. But we know it doesn't turn out as well as Peter hoped. Sometimes that happens to us, doesn't it? We have great expectations of ourselves. We have great plans for ourselves. We sincerely mean it. We are gut-level honest about it. But then, for one reason or another, somehow, it just doesn't turn out that ideal way we envisioned. We're not the hero we thought we would be. We're not the super saint we thought we would be. Peter, how we ought to be able to identify with him. Because number two, failure by fear. Failure by fear instead of faith. He followed by faith, but now fear will overtake him. It will not be the first time, as we think about the events of this awful night, that fear has interfered with Peter's faith. In fact, if you'll turn back to Matthew chapter 14, you see an early occasion in Jesus' ministry with Peter being a follower where fear became a factor. In Matthew chapter 14, beginning at verse 22, we see that the disciples of Jesus are on a boat. They're out in the middle of the sea, and there's a storm, and Jesus comes walking along on the water. And the Bible tells us that not only was Peter afraid, but they were all afraid. Verse 26, Matthew 14, verse 26 says, when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled. I would be too. You know, but they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. Jesus immediately spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him. Well, there he goes again. First one to pop up. Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be you, command me to come to you on the water." Now, sometimes I really, in reading that text, I've thought, what was he thinking? is he really? I guess he was serious. You know, I mean, like I said, Peter jumped into everything with both feet and eyes closed a lot of times. But I guess he was sincere about it. And he saw Jesus out there and he thought, why not? I love Jesus' response. One word. Come. It is come. Well, I'm not necessarily sure that Peter's, you know, trying to dare Jesus here or anything like that. I'm not going to make his motives that way. But Jesus has called his bluff if he is. And now suddenly here's all these other, Peter's, you know, there on the boat and there's all these other guys around him. And Jesus said, come. And I'm sure they're all saying, you know, where are you going or not? You know, and now Peter, I don't know, maybe he's excited about it. Maybe he's thinking, hey, I really could do this. But you get to the edge of that boat and you realize, you know, it's several hundred feet down to the bottom and it's nighttime and all that. You got to be a little afraid. And so he's at the edge of the boat. And I often envision this, you know, Peter kind of doing this. is this going to hold me or not? You know, and just sort of maybe putting his foot out there and holding on to the boat, you know, like a toddler when they're learning how to walk, you know, and they kind of hold on to the coffee table or whatever it is for as long as they can. I sort of envision him holding on to that boat as long as he could till finally, he got out of reach and he had to walk. Now say what you will. We know, you remember this point is failure by fear. We know that Peter is about to sink because the Bible tells us that he, in verse 30, saw that the wind was boisterous. He was afraid, beginning to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me." We know what's about to happen here. But give Peter a medal, okay? He's the only person in the history of the world that can say what? I walked on water. You know, at least he got out of the boat. I sort of wonder if the other guys were on the boat when they saw Peter, you know, finally let go of the boat and take those few steps. I sort of wonder if they were thinking, if he can do it, I mean, didn't they all think this way about one another anyway? You know, if he can do it, I can't. I wonder if somebody had their leg already, you know, over the edge of the boat, and all of a sudden Peter, and they thought, not today. And Jesus lovingly, caringly takes him back to the boat. He saves him. But notice what he says. "O you," verse 31, "of little faith, why did you doubt?" Fear. Our failures so oftentimes are tied to our fear. In all four gospel accounts, we read about the denial. We go back to that awful night, and we read about the denial. And everyone gives us just a little different perspective and a little different detail. But Peter denied Jesus after saying that he never would. In fact, Matthew's account in Matthew chapter 26, verse 74, tells us that he began to curse and swear in his denials. He was just as emphatic in his denials as he was in his affirmations. And he's failing. Let's look at the account in Luke 22. We were in Luke 22 at the beginning, where Jesus tells him, "I prayed for you." But now let's look at Luke's account of this, beginning in Luke 22, verse 54. Luke 22, 54. "Having arrested him," Jesus, "they led him and brought him to the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance." Sometimes that's the way we would like to follow Jesus, isn't it? Just at a distance. "Now, when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, 'This man also was with him.' But he denied him, saying, 'Woman, I do not know him.' And after a little while, another said, looked at him and said, or saw him and said, 'You also are one of them.' But Peter said, 'Man, I am not.' Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, 'Surely this fellow also was with them, for he is a Galilean.'" We learn, when you look at all the parallel accounts, that one of these people that is pointing out that Peter was with them was related to a kinsman of Malchus, whose ear Peter had cut off. They know who he is. And now he knows that they know who he is. I don't know about you, but I would be terrified. They've arrested your Lord, your master. They've taken him away. The intent is murderous at heart. And there you are. I would be terrified. I understand how Peter felt the way that he did. But we keep reading in our text when verse 59 tells us that it was affirmed that he was a Galilean confidently. Peter said to him, "Man, I do not know what you are saying." Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And then there's a detail given in verse 61 that you only read in Luke. "And the Lord turned and looked at Peter." And at that very moment, everything that Jesus had said about the denial, about the rooster crowing, everything came crashing down in his mind and his heart. Because the Lord turned and looked at him. I don't know if they were 20 feet apart, 50 feet apart, but they were close enough together. Jesus could see and apparently hear Peter. And Peter knew when the Lord looked at him. And he had done the very thing that he said he would never do. Been there, done that. All of us. We have all done the very thing or things that we said we would never do. Just like Peter. And when the Lord looked at him, and the Lord sees, just like Peter, the Lord sees us and the Lord hears us. and the Lord looks on us. Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. He was broken. He was so hurt. He was so devastated. All his boldness, all his outspokenness, completely gone. Reduced to weeping. No doubt, he was inconsolable. I know Jesus did not sleep that night because of all the ongoing trial and the beatings and everything that happened to him. Peter left. I'm not exactly sure where he went, but he left. I would gather to say he slept not at all that night. The pain that he had brought on himself, the choices that he had made, the foolishness that he had committed. Now there's a third point in our lesson, a second part to our lesson that we're going to look at next week, and that's the forgiveness. You know, if our story were to end right here, if it all ended with Peter went out and wept, think of that last word, bitterly. What if Peter's story ended with that word right there, bitterly? What a sad, pathetic, heart-wrenching, soul-killing ending that would be. Bitterly. Read ahead. I mean, like I said, we're not studying any new ground here. We know what's going to happen next. But it's worthy for us next Sunday morning to take the time to study it. But as we come to a halt right now with part one, if there was a word to be used as the final word to describe your life, if one last word could be used to refer to you, your choices, your decision, your life, what would that word be? Peter's last word, the last word that could have been used to describe Peter, could have been the word bitterly. We know, by the grace of God, that it was not, and it would not be that. Because we know all of Peter's story. My story is not done yet. Neither is yours. What word would be the last word used to describe you? To describe your life? To describe your Christianity? To describe your choices? What's the word? What's the last thing, the last word, the last statement that could be used to describe me when my story is done? And it's all finished. What's the final word? What's the period at the end of the sentence, at the end of the chapter, at the end of the book called my life? I can't determine that for you, and I can't decide that for you any more than you can for me. But we're going to sing a song of invitation, a song of encouragement, that if that last word on the page is not one that you want to be there, and it's not the word that it needs to be, God's going to hand you an eraser. And God's going to let you change that word, just like He did with Peter. And God's going to let you repent, and God's going to let you obey the gospel. And God, through the blood of Jesus, when you are immersed in the name of Christ, wash away and erase the sin. And then you, by the grace of God, get to write a different word there. A better word. Let God bless you, help you, lead you, and forgive you. Would you come this morning?